We have been talking about a character in the Bible whose name is Abraham. Abraham is a cool guy who believed God even in the midst of crazy trials. And in the book of Genesis, as you study the book of Genesis, which we're doing, we decided since we were Genesis Church, we'd start at the beginning. The first book of the Bible is the book of Genesis, and we just started to start with the story that is there, which really is about God. Now, there's some great people. Most of them are really whacked out. Most of them have deep problems and issues. And, you know, we have this image sometimes that if somebody becomes a follower of Jesus, everything's perfect. They don't have any problems in their life. They won't, you know, ever fail again. Well, that's not the picture of Genesis. These guys have all kinds of issues. But as we look at Genesis, ultimately, it is the story of God. It is the story of how God works and loves people. And sometimes he has to deal with them because at the beginning of the story, Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3, God creates everything that is. And then he creates human beings. He creates us. But we choose to be our own God and call our own shots. We rebel against the one who created us, and we say, hey, I don't care if there's a God up there. I just kind of like my life the way it is. I'm going to run my show and call my shots instead of honoring the God who created us. And we have rebelled against them. Adam and Eve, the first two humans did. We do it. And as a result, there's this spiral that is going. It is a spiral that is straight downward, kind of like, you know, what happens when you put water in your sink and it just goes downhill. Humanity is doing that. All we got to do is pick up the newspaper to figure that out. We look at what's going on in the Middle East and try to make sense of what's happening. And it cries out, people are selfish. They want their own way. They want to run the world. People who are in power just love to rule everybody else. And nobody wants to honor God. We want to honor ourselves. And that's the story. And the first 11 chapters of Genesis, that's really what happens, is that we just see story after story after story of people who just kind of do their own thing and reject God, and they just gradually get worse and worse and worse. And God is patient. God is loving. God eventually deals with their sin, but then God also has another way that he steps into the lives of people. We're going to be talking about that with this character named Abraham this morning. Abraham is one of the most important people that ever lived. In fact, 55% of the people on this planet link their spiritual heritage back to Abraham. This guy was just a nomadic wanderer. He lived in Ur, this town that was kind of in present-day Babylon. And God called him. God said, leave your family, leave everything, leave your possessions and your inheritance and your security. Leave it behind, follow me, and I'm going to show you where to go. And God led him to what is now presently the nation or the land that is Israel that we know today. Then it was just kind of a region where some people lived there, but God told him, he said, I'm going to give this place to your children. But there was a problem. Abraham had no kids. And this is the story we're going to be looking at of how God, who loves us passionately, intervenes in the lives of people. And that's the story of the Bible, that people are messed up, but God is good, and God offers us his love. I remember a few years ago, we went to a seminar that dealt with this book called The Five Love Languages. Now, if you're married, I want to encourage you. It's a good book, really good book to read, and it might help you with some things. For example, as a man, I had no idea what was going on in the mind of my wife. Just had no idea. And I learned that, you know, what happens in her is that she is constantly thinking and moving her ideas. You know, guys, you know, a woman walks up to a guy and says, what are you thinking? And his answer is what? Nothing. And it drives women crazy. Because if a woman says, if you ever walk up to a woman and say, what are you thinking? And she says nothing, she's lying to you. But guys, if a girl walks up to a man and says, what are you thinking? And he says nothing, he's telling you the truth. There's nothing going on in there, you know? There's not a little mouse on a wheel that's spinning it. We're just, you know, staring at the TV, football, that's it, you know? We're just zoned out. And I had a hard time figuring out how to speak to my wife, especially speak love to her, explain to her that I really cared about her. And I found out when I did this study or did this book that I have some love languages. In fact, the way that I best give and receive love is through touch and through quality time. I like to be close to the person, my wife that I'm with, and I like to also have her touch my hair and touch my legs and just show love that way. My wife doesn't like anybody touching her. I found out this week my son's the same way. Don't touch me, okay? You know, and so I'd try to be all cuddly. I'd try to come up and give her a back rub, and she would be like, would you just get away? And I was freaking out. It was hard because I thought I was giving love. Now, as a man, I found out that my wife's love language was the absolute worst of the five. Now, there's five love languages in this book. They are, and I got this right here, the five love languages are words of affirmation, receiving gifts, quality time, acts of service, and physical touch. And I tried all these. I tried to go out and buy my wife gifts, right? For example, this one time, she's going to be mad at me. This is going to be one of those days in the Hubbard house where she's going to go, I can't believe you told everybody this. I went out and bought this beautiful necklace for my wife for Valentine's Day, thinking, okay, she's going to open this up and she's just going to feel loved because I went out and spent a little extra on Valentine's Day. And so I was so excited. It had been a long time. We kind of had this tradition of buying pajamas, and that was really sweet. But I realized she had like a drawer full of pajamas I'd given her on Valentine's Day over the years. She didn't need any more. I'm going to go buy her this beautiful necklace. It had earrings and a ring that went with it. It was ruby. It was beautiful. I was so excited. Valentine's Day. This is going to be so neat. And I handed her this box. The anticipation was there. She opened the box. I'm telling you the truth. She opened the box and she went, oh. And I said, don't you like it? She goes, how much did it cost? And I went, oh. But see, what I realized, I wasn't speaking her love language. Her love language is not gifts. Now, I still go out and buy her stuff. I love getting her flowers. But I learned that her love language was the hardest one for me to speak, which is acts of service, okay? She likes when I do stuff for me. I was out, this is true. I was out on the deck a few weeks ago. We were finishing our deck, and I'm out on the deck working. I didn't want to be there. It was hot. I was tired. I was bored with it. You know, the Cardinals were on, and I really want to turn on TV and watch that. But I'm out there, and I am you know, painting this deck. She looks at me. She looks at, you know, and I'm just a mess. I got stuff all over me. She looks at me. She goes, I'm the most attracted you have been in a long time. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is crazy. Her love language is service. And so when I do acts of service, when I love her by serving her, by cleaning the kitchen and doing the dishes and things like that, that is the way that she hears from me the loudest, I love you. It's very important. Now, guys, if you've got a girl, here's my secret to you. Find out how she receives love and speak that language to her. But have you ever thought about this question? How does God speak the language of love to us? How does God speak the language of love? Because the Bible teaches us very clearly that God is love. He's crazy about us. He loves us deeply. But sometimes it's hard. We don't know how to receive it because we don't know how he speaks his love language. And I'm going to be talking to you about a concept today that's kind of different. If you've been in church, you may not have heard a whole lot of people talking about this concept. And even if you, if you haven't, this is going to be something that is language that we don't really use today. It's a language that we're going to talk about, this idea called covenant. Because covenant is the love language of God. All through the Bible, God speaks through making covenants with people. Now, covenant, it comes from a Hebrew word that basically means an agreement between two people. It is when they come together and they form an agreement to be bound to one another in a very special and most of all relational and intimate way. The Bible is full of covenants, but the most important covenants in the Bible are covenants where God makes covenants with his people, where God steps out of heaven and literally intervenes into the madness that is this world, intervenes into the darkness that is this world, and turns on a light in the life of an individual or a group of people and says, I'm here for you, I love you, and I'm going to let you know how much I love you. I'll never leave you. That's what covenants are all about. They're all through the Bible. And if you want to understand the Bible, you need to understand the love language that are the covenants of the Bible. Because God is really speaking our language, but we've got to find a way to listen to him and receive that love. That's what covenants are all about. And as we look at the life of Abraham, Abraham is a guy that God made a covenant. Now, let me give you a definition of what a covenant is. A covenant is God's way of communicating his love for his people and his promise to give them himself. Which is the greatest gift God could give, himself. It is God's way of communicating his love for his people and his promise to give them himself. And in Genesis chapter 15 primarily, chapter 12, chapter 15, chapter 17, God is speaking to Abraham and he keeps reaffirming this covenant, this love language that he speaks with Abraham. Now, if you have a Bible, we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 12 and Genesis chapter 15. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your row, we have Bibles there for you. We'd love for you to take one of those, to use that this morning. I believe we're going to be on pages 8 and 9 in that Bible this morning. And if you don't have a Bible at home, or yours is kind of older, or is in a language that, you know, maybe is older and you don't understand, that is our gift to you. We'd love for you to take that home, keep that for yourself, use that, read it every day, because we believe that God speaks through the Bible. In Genesis chapter 12, God speaks to Abraham for the first time. We're going to read verses 1 to 3, and then we're going to go over to chapter 15 and read a few verses. But these are the verses where God speaks to Abraham, steps out of heaven into the darkness, the madness that is this world, the messed up place, and says, I love you. I'm calling you to myself. This is what he says. The Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, your kindred, your father's house to the land I will show you. I'll make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and to him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. You hear, God speaks to Abram and says, listen, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to change you. I'm going to make a difference, but I'm also going to use you to bless all the nations. Abraham at this point in time is about 75 years old. He has no kids. God says, I'm going to make you a great nation. Abraham says, I don't have any kids. How's that going to work? God says, trust me, follow me, serve me. And so over in chapter 15, this is a number of years later, nothing's happened. They haven't had kids. There hasn't been a change in that. And God speaks to him again, chapter 15. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Fear not, Abram, I'm your shield. Your reward will be very great. But Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. He said, God, you told me a number of years ago that I was going to have a child and that I was going to be a great nation. God, nothing's happened. My wife is now old, like really old, okay? Like way beyond, like she's in her 70s now, God. Not a good age to have a baby. How many of you ladies, you know, you're like, okay, I have. If I didn't have kids by the time of 70 and God spoke to me, I'd be like, God, you know, that's okay. Not at this age. Not going to happen. That's what's going on. She's in her 70s, and Abram's going, God, you know, you spoke to me. You promised me. I don't get it. You said you were going to be here for me. This is what God says to him. Chapter 15, verse 4. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him. This man will not be your heir. Your very own son will be your heir. He says, you're going to have a son. He'll be your heir. And he brought him outside and said, look toward the heaven, the number of stars, if you are able to number them. Then he said to him, so will your offspring be. And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness. Look at verse 18. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. This is what it's about. God is speaking Abram's love language, and he's speaking ours. He is speaking the love language of the Bible, where God steps into a messed up world and speaks in the hearts of people and says, listen, I love you. I'm crazy about you. I have something for you. And here's kind of the whole story of the Bible. The Bible begins in Genesis chapter 1 with God creating. In Genesis chapter 2, he creates people. He creates Adam and Eve. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve say, don't want you, God. I want my own way. I'm blowing you off. I'm going to follow myself. And they sin. And they fall, and God is brokenhearted. There's separation between God and them, and God makes the first covenant. He makes a covenant with Adam, the first man, and he says, listen, you messed up. You listened to Satan. You listened to the serpent, but I someday am going to crush his head. A number of years goes, and man just keeps getting worse and worse and worse, and God finally sends a flood, but he calls a guy named Noah, and God speaks his love language, speaks into his heart, and Noah obeys and follows God. He builds a big old boat. It's a huge thing. We talked about this a number of weeks ago, and God sends rain. He floods the earth, but he saves Noah. And God makes a covenant with Noah. He speaks Noah's love language, and he says, here's what I'm going to do. I'll never flood the earth again. I'll never flood the whole earth again, and here's my rainbow to prove it. But Noah and his sons reproduce. They have kids. They turn into nations, and those nations are wicked. They reject God. It's dark. It's confusing. It's a messed up world. And out of that messed up world, God speaks in the life of this one guy, this nomadic shepherd named Abram. And he says, I'm going to raise out of you a people. you're going to have a seed. And that people is going to produce this seed. And that seed, because of you, what I'm going to do in your life, all the nations on this planet are going to be blessed because of you. And out of Abram, who later becomes Abraham, God raises up the people who are the Hebrew or the Jewish people. And the Jewish people, God raised them up. They end up spending 400 years in Egypt. And after spending 400 years in Egypt, God delivers them from Egypt. And God speaks into life. Their lives are messed up. They're in a wicked place. They don't know what to do. It's dark. And God speaks into life of this guy named Moses. And God calls Moses and said, Moses, lead these people out of here. He proves himself awesome through these plagues and through parting of this huge sea where God literally splits the sea in half so they can walk across on dry ground. And God proves himself to be incredible. And as he proves himself to be incredible, they come to this mountain called Sinai. And at Sinai, God says, I want to renew my covenant with you. I want to speak your love language. I will be your God. You'll be my people. Obey me, follow me, serve me. I'll make a difference in your life. Not only that, you are now a people. I'm going to give you a place. I'm going to take you to this land that is Israel. And God takes them to the land, and eventually they rebel. They disobey. They don't honor God. God is still faithful to his covenant. He's faithful to his promise, and they end up in this land that is Israel. And while they are in Israel, they spend all these years there, and they follow their own way. They reject God wholeheartedly. And the cycle just keeps going, this downward spiral. But in the darkness, God speaks to this guy named David. And he says, David, you are the king over Israel. But one day there's going to be a king that is in your family that will rule eternally. And God makes a covenant with David. It says, as long as you're alive and beyond, there will be a king on the throne of Israel over my people that will come from your heritage, your family. What a cool thing. So now they have a kingdom. First there was a people, then there was a place. Now it's a kingdom. And as there's this kingdom that grows, most of the kings are just wicked, evil dudes, man. Most of them are just messed up, screwed up people. They treat people wrongly, and they despise God. And in the midst of it, God raises up this guy named Jeremiah. And Jeremiah says, one day there's going to be a new covenant. There's going to be a different type of covenant. It's not a covenant that's going to be written on tablets. It's going to be a covenant that's written on the hearts of people. And when Jesus is having his service, his last supper with his disciples, he takes the bread and the wine, and he says, this is the new covenant in my blood. Jesus is speaking God's love language when he's with his disciples. He says, something's going to change. It's going to be a new way of God interacting with you. That's covenant. And here, Abraham, God enters into a covenant with Abraham. But I want to tell you that God has offered you the same type of covenants. God speaks your love language. He's crazy about you. He speaks your love language. It's the language that says, I am here. I won't leave you. I will never betray you. You won't keep the covenant. I get that. I will. And because I'm faithful, you can trust me. That's what he says to Abraham here. And in this story, there's a lot to it. I'm going to just kind of give you the highlights. One of the things I will encourage you to do is to just kind of reread chapters 12, 15, and even chapter 17 that I'll only allude to this morning. As God speaks in the life of Abraham three different times his love language, his covenant, and says, I love you. I'm going to use you. You're going to change the world. You just trust me. And I want to tell you just a few things about this. Share just about five things that God does every time he speaks his love language. Every time there's a covenant, and it's what I believe he wants to do in our lives even today. And the first thing that God does when he starts with a covenant, the first thing he does is God speaks. Chapter 15, verse 1 says, the word of the Lord came to Abram. God spoke. I don't know how. Here it says he had a vision that, you know, he may have been asleep and had a dream, or he may have been sitting in his, you know, Barco lounger watching TV, and all of a sudden, you know, that he was changing channels. All of a sudden, there's God on the TV. Hey, I'm God. I got to talk to you today. We don't know. God speaks to Abraham. And this is the thing I want to tell you, though. I believe that God still speaks today. I don't believe that God sat down and shut up and it doesn't talk anymore. I believe that God speaks in the lives of his people. And if you will listen, God will speak. But the way he speaks, the clearest, the way he speaks the best, the way that we're going to understand him the most is how he speaks through his word, the scriptures, and through his son, Jesus. I do believe that God still speaks to us. But if you really want to hear him, open this book and read it. If you've never read the Bible before, open this book and you're going to go about two-thirds of the way through to a book called Mark. It's a great book of the Bible. The book of Mark is short and it's simple. And this guy was a friend of this other guy named Peter. And Mark is writing down Peter's thoughts because, see, Peter actually walked with Jesus. He was one of Jesus' best friends while he was on this earth. And Peter, through this guy named John Mark, hence the name of the book, Mark, tells the story of Jesus. It's a great place to start. You'll find out who Jesus is and what he did and what he's about. The book of Mark is a great place to start. You start opening this, you start reading it. I believe that God will speak to you. He will literally open his mouth and say things to you. And every time God speaks, this is what he says. The first thing he does is he reveals himself. When God speaks, the first thing he's always going to do in our lives is he's going to tell us who he is and what he's about. In chapter 15, verse 1, the first thing God says is, I am your shield. And what the text here says in English is, your reward will be great. But the best way to read this is to say, I am your shield and I am your great reward. See, what just happened is Abraham decided not to take all this stuff that this king had offered him. This king said, I'll make you rich. And Abraham said, nope, the only one who's going to make me rich is God. And God says, way to go, Abram. You trusted me, and I'm going to be your great reward. And listen, he speaks to us. God speaks every time we find a covenant. You know, I wish I'd have had time this morning to read all the covenants that I told you about, where God speaks the love language. But every time God shows up, the first thing he does is he says, let me tell you who I am. I am one God. I'm a God who loves you deeply. I'm a God who is the King of Kings. I'm the God who is the great I am. I exist. Nothing exists outside of me. I run the show. I am sovereign. I'm in control. And every time God speaks to these people, he shows us who he is. And if you're hearing God speak, if you want to understand what God says to you, first thing you need to understand is he's going to show us himself. We, you know, really would like a God who kind of takes his place in the shadows and doesn't really tell us who he's about. We want a God who will speak to us and tell us how he's going to do great things for us. He's going to give us miracles. We're going to wake up tomorrow morning and we're going to be rich. Or we're going to have a big car. We don't want a God who really says, hey, this is who I am. I'm it. Follow me. But that's what God does. God starts by saying, this is who I am. He reveals himself. Second, he reveals his purposes. God says to Abram over in chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, he says, listen, this is what I'm about. Here's my covenant with you. I'm going to make you a great nation, and as I make you a great nation, all the world is going to be blessed because of you. Eventually, that blessing comes because Jesus comes through Abram. God raises up this people. He eventually sends his son. What a great blessing. But that's what God is saying. What is God up to right now? Making my life easier? No. What is God up to? What are his purposes? He loves people, and he wants to save them from themselves. That's what God's up to. And so God reveals his purposes. Not only that, God reveals his ways. He tells Abram in chapter 15, verses 2 through 6, this is what he says. In verses 2 and 3, he says, listen, you promised me a long time ago I was going to have a son. Verse 4, 5, and 6, he says, and behold, the word of the Lord came. This man shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir. He brought him outside and said, look toward the heaven, and number the stars if you were able to number them. Then he said, so shall your offspring be. Can you imagine this? What a great scene. Abram goes, God, you made a promise to me. That promise is that I was going to be a father of a great nation. I'm an old dude, man. My wife's old. We got no kids. What's up? Have you ever done that with God? God, I know what you told me, and I really want to believe that you're faithful, but I ain't seeing it. It's not connected with me. And God says, listen, says to Abram, come with me. They go outside. It's got to be just this, probably this incredible night, you know, away from city lights, clear as a bell. God says, look at the stars. Abram's just kind of checking them out. He goes, count them if you can. And Abraham starts counting, and all of a sudden he comes to realization. Dude, there's a lot of stars up there. That is wicked, man. That is awesome. And God says to him, I'm going to give you more children who will be followers of God than there are stars in the heavens. He says, you just trust me. God says, this is how I'm going to do it. And then he says, your offspring, they're going to become a nation. And it's going to be hard for them. They're going to go spend 400 years in a country that's not their own. They're going to be slaves there. But even in the midst of that, I'm going to prove to them that I'm faithful. And God speaks to them. Listen, I believe that God still speaks. Listen to the voice of God. Look for the voice of God. Hear the voice of God. He will speak to you. He'll show you who he is. He'll show you what he's about. He'll show you what he's up to. He'll show you that he is a God who is still about saving the nations, about saving people from every tribe. And at the end of time, at the throne of God, there are going to be people from every tribe, every nation, every tongue standing there praising Jesus because he's a great God. The second thing that God does every time is he invites Abram. He invites us into, first of all, a relationship. God says to Abraham, listen, I love you. I want you to come into a relationship. There's two types of covenants. The first type of covenant in the ancient world was a king who said, I can kick your butt, so you better serve me. I can take you out anytime I want to, so you better honor me. And some of the language of the covenants of God is where God says, I'm the Lord, there's nobody else, you need to serve me. But there's another type of covenant, and that is a covenant of companionship, where two friends locked arms and said, we will together forever be friends with one another. Our series title is God's BFF, God's best friend forever. That's the story. The God who is over us, who is Lord, desires to be friends with us, desires a relationship with us. And this is what God says. Listen, God invites you to a relationship with him. Not some weird religion where if you keep the checklist and do all the right stuff and go to church the right number of Sundays and wear the right clothes and everything's got to be perfect and then somehow God will be okay with you and let you in. That's not it. God invites me. I am messed up. I am screwed up. I have issues. I have areas of my life that don't fit, that don't work, and God is in heaven, but God has invited me to have a relationship with him. It's an invitation. It's an invitation he offers to every one of you. To know him. But then when he invites us into a relationship, he invites us to his mission. Which is, here's what I want you to do. I want you to know me and love me, and I'm going to use you to change the world. Turn it upside down. Most people of religion of this world may like the first part, but they don't experience the fullness of God because they're not following the invitation to the second part. This is why, you know, when as a guy who's done youth ministry, when I've taken kids on mission trips, they come back and they're ready to take the world for Jesus. You know, march into hell with the water's pistol and take over kind of faith because they've been on mission with God. In Genesis, that's what we want to be about. We want to be on mission with God. We want to join him in what he's doing. He is offering us an invitation to go into this world, hence Bible clubs. You know, we're not going to go crazy and, you know, hound people, but we want to tell them that there's a God who loves them, who speaks their love language. If they'll just listen, he sent his son Jesus, and he invites them. The third thing God does is that God calls. In this covenant and every one, God says, first of all, I want you to trust me. God calls Abram and says, trust me. You don't see it yet. I know. Trust me. Trust me. And you know, the first thing God calls us to do is to trust him, to place our faith in him. But then out of that trust, God calls us to obey him, to follow him, to serve him. This week we went on vacation. We went down to Branson, had a great time. You know, we did all kinds of things. And, you know, like every vacation, we really came home and needed a vacation from our vacation, but we had more to do than we knew what to do when we got home. You know, that's the way vacation is, right? But we had a great time. And as we were on vacation, my daughter Alex, who is a great kid, I love her to death, but sometimes she's a little scared to do things. And we, you know, took my boat out, and I don't have this big, fast boat. It's actually a hunting boat. You know, can you imagine, you know, a camouflage boat out there pulling a tube? But that's what we were doing. We were out there pulling this inner tube in this camouflage boat. We look like a bunch of rednecks on vacation. There you go. And we're pulling this tube. Andy gets up on it, man. We're swinging around. He has a great time. Alex is going, I don't want to do it. And you can see that she was afraid. She was a little bit nervous, and she just didn't want to get up there on the tube. And I kept telling her, listen, trust me. Trust me. You will have a great time. If you do this, when you go home, you are going to be glad that you did. But if you miss it, you're going to miss a great blessing. Trust me. But see, her trust required obedience, which meant she had to follow Dad's instructions and go get on the tube. And it was scary for her. But she did it, and I hit that motor, you know, and here we go to redneck pulling the, you know, inner tube. We're taking off water, and we hadn't gone 10 feet where I see this big old giant grin across her face. She's back there just cutting up and laughing, having a great time as we pull her across the lake. It took her to trust me and obey me. Same thing with God. God says, trust me, and then obey. If we flip the order, we say obey, then trust, we're going to turn it into legalism, keeping God's set of rules. That's not it. It's God who wants us in a relationship says, trust me. That's covenant. That's God's love language. The fourth thing that God does is that God blesses. God blesses. I don't have a lot of time to go into this, but ultimately the best way that God blesses Abram and all his people are his presence. He gives them his presence. There's this incredible weird story in this. If you read the whole passage, and as you read it, you're going to be like, okay, this is bizarre. Abraham says, how am I going to know? And God says, go get a couple animals and cut them up. That's weird, okay? And so Abraham goes, gets these animals, and he cuts them in half, okay? That in and of itself is kind of bizarre. But he cuts them in half, and he lays one half over here, and he lays one half over here. And we read it and go, that's just kind of whacked out weird. You know, the Humane Society is going to show up and be really upset about this. But what's going on is, in that culture, when people entered into a covenant, what they would do is they would put the animals on both. They would take an animal, they would cut them in half, and they would put the animals on both sides. And then they would walk through the middle. They would just kind of walk through the middle of these dead animals, which is really weird, but here's what they were saying. As they walked through the animals, they were saying to the other person, I love you so much that if I don't keep my end of the agreement as these animals are, so should I be. I love you so much. I'm entering into this love relationship, this covenant with you, and if I don't keep what I told you I was going to do, I need to end up like one of these animals. That's how deep the covenant is. When people marry, that's really what they're trying to say. I love you so much, I'd rather die than leave you. I keep telling my wife, if you ever leave me, I'm going with you. I'd rather die than leave you. And that's what God says. And so what happens is Abraham follows the orders. He kind of cuts up the animals and goes through this weird ritual. And then he sits back and he goes into this deep dread, this deep sleep, this deep loneliness. And he's not sure what to make of it. And then he looks up and he sees this fire pot and this flame. This smoking pot and this flame literally walk between these animals. And God's people reading this knew exactly what this is. This was the presence of God. Now here's what doesn't happen. Abram never walks through the animals. Because when God makes a covenant, he knows we're not going to keep it. He knows we're going to fail and mess up, but he will keep his end. He's faithful. And the greatest blessing is God himself. And the last thing, every time God made a covenant, God foreshadows. God foreshadows. The new covenant is in Jeremiah chapter 31. And in this new covenant, Jeremiah speaking says, there's going to be a day when I'm going to do things a little bit different in the covenants. And it works like this. He says, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord. I'll make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It's not like the covenant which I made with their fathers the day I took them by the hand and brought them to the land of Egypt. My covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. But this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them and their hearts I will write it. I will be their God. They'll be my people. They will not teach again each man his own neighbor and each man his brother saying, know the Lord. For they will all know me. From the least of them to the greatest of them, declares the Lord. I will forgive their iniquity and their sin I will remember no more. Every covenant, every time God speaks love language, he is picturing something. He says, Abraham, you're going to have a seed. And we read it and we think that seed is his son Isaac. It's not. Galatians tell us that seed is Jesus. That when God promises Abraham that he's going to have a son, that son's going to have a son, that son's going to have a son. And in that line of sons, God is eventually going to send his own son, Jesus. He comes to Moses and he gives them the law. And he says, listen, this is what I want you to do. I want you to obey this law, but nobody obeys it. But it is a picture of the fact that eventually Jesus is coming and Jesus perfectly obeyed God's law. He did everything just like God wanted him to do. And when we can't, he did. And he says to David, you're a king and I'm going to make your kingdom great, but someday there's going to be a son of yours that's going to sit on your throne. He's going to reign forever. Jesus is that king. The whole story of the Bible, God's love language is that Jesus is coming He's all that matters. Jesus came, lived on this earth. He lived a perfect life. He pleased the Father. He was the seed of Abraham. He died on a cross. He paid the penalty for the way I rebel against God, the way you do. And he rose 3 days later, and he ultimately is God's ultimate love language. And when Jesus said, this is the new covenant in my blood, this is what he was saying. The best way I can ever communicate my love for you is by paying the price for your sin and dying on the cross for you. And that's it. That's God's love language. God's love language is, yes, you're unfaithful. Yes, you have issues. Yes, you have hurt. Yes, you have pain. I love you. I'll never leave you. I'll walk through the middle of that covenant. And even when you're unfaithful, I won't be. Even when you're unlovely, I love you. Ultimately, there's two options in the Bible. There's the curse, which is the result of sin. And I can live under the curse, which means I live with the consequences of rebelling against God, calling my own shots, and doing my own things. Or I can choose to trust Christ and live under the covenant, God's love language. The curse is my way. The covenant is saying I trust Jesus wholeheartedly. Not Jesus and something else, Jesus alone. And I'm going to serve him and love him. And even when we fail, God will be faithful. We have a little video to kind of close out the message this morning that kind of says that. And that video will challenge you to realize that even when you're unlovely and unfaithful, God still loves you. His love language is the language of covenants. He spoke one to Abraham. He is offering one to you. If you have a relationship with Christ, live in faith. If you don't, realize that God is offering his love this morning.